BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
How you feeling about your college football team? How you feeling about your Oregon Ducks? How you feeling about Oregon State? How are you feeling if your team is Georgia? How are you feeling if your team is Washington State? I just want to check in with you on this great Monday in late October, right around the time that college football ramps up and really just spills us into the month of November, where dreams are made and hearts are broken. Not where hearts are made and dreams are broken. But I'm left today thinking about Oregon's season. Going to Ann Arbor this weekend. Last time I was in Ann Arbor, 2007 with Oregon. Been there since, but 2007 with Oregon, their last trip to Ann Arbor. I saw the Ducks put on a show. Game was 7-6. Dennis Dixon, Statue of Liberty again. Michigan didn't know what to do. Recruits after the game, they had a bunch of recruits on the Michigan sideline, and after the game, I ended up talking to a bunch of recruits, much to the dismay of Michigan and their coaching staff, and the recruits were just bubbling and giddy about the performance that Oregon had put on. Oregon was cooler. Oregon was better. Oregon had snappier uniforms. And those recruits told me, we want to go to Oregon. It's exactly what Michigan didn't want to hear. And yet, I look now at what has happened in the last 17 years. And, of course, Michigan's coming off a national championship. They have nothing to hang their head about. They're not having a great season by their standards this year. But Oregon has accelerated to the forefront of college football. It is a really good job. And somebody asked me today whether or not I thought Dan Lanning would ever leave Oregon. Like, would he leave Oregon for Ohio State? And I said, I don't think he would. I think he has a better job. Oregon feels permanent here. This doesn't feel like a visit into the top 10. It feels to me like Oregon's going to stay in the top 10. I could be wrong, but Oregon's got the coach. It's got the NIL resources. It has all of the swag. It has the fan base. There aren't a lot of these things nationally, and there's certainly a shortage of these kinds of programs that appear west of the Rockies, okay? So, like, if you're a USC fan or a Washington fan, we can have a conversation about what your schools need to do to get on the level that Oregon's at right now. But Oregon right now is alone in the western part of the United States, sitting where they are sitting, in this kind of position as the season is upon us. And by the season being upon us, I mean the meat of the season. I mean that we are literally looking at the most important part of the year and Oregon sitting pretty. Now, John Wilner of the Bay Area News Group is the only voter nationally who does not have the Ducks at the number one position in the AP poll. I recorded a little interview with Wilner as part of the podcast that we do, Canzano and Wilner, the podcast, and I peppered him on why didn't he pick the Ducks number one, to try to get a sense of what Wilner sees there, what he is thinking, how that goes. Now, I want to caution people, like, I do think it's dangerous to try to get everybody in one cohesive place, seeing the world the same way. Like, I am a big believer that groupthink is a bad thing, that groupthink causes the downfall of companies. It causes the downfall of some of the industries. Groupthink can be incredibly destructive in the wrong hands with the wrong leaders. I can tell you, I think the Blazers are a great example of how groupthink can be bad. When you've got a bunch of people who are afraid to challenge and present their own critical thinking and tell leadership, hey, I think we're moving in a bad direction. I think for years the Blazers organization existed in such a place that they were infected by groupthink. I think it's dangerous to tell pollsters, hey, you should see the world the same way. And Wilner has the Ducks second, not first. He's the only voter in the AP poll not to put the Ducks first. And his logic, I can tell you some of it, but I want you to hear it in his words coming up later in the show. His logic is in part based in by the fact that he just believes that Georgia's played better opponents, that Oregon has played Oregon State, UCLA, and Purdue. Those are the road games. It has a win over Ohio State, who, by the way, didn't look great last week. Georgia, meanwhile, even though it's lost a game, it has it clobbered Clemson. It clobbered Texas. He thinks Georgia's the number one team in the country, but he is the only one among AP voters who see it that way. Now, I have a Heisman vote. I do not have a top 25 vote, and I don't want a top 25 vote. It gives you, too many things to do on Sunday night and Monday morning, and I would rather be creating content for this radio show and writing at johnconzano.com instead of sitting there trying to decide who's number 24, who's number 25, who's number 26. In the end, Wilner has decided to put the Ducks second. It's not that dramatically that different than people who are putting the Ducks first. It doesn't affect the outcome of the poll. And in fact, in some charming way, it presents a contrarian viewpoint, at least by one of the voters. I am a big fan of that critical thinking because I do think it sort of lends, like, I would hate for him to change his vote just because he says, well, everybody else is voting that way. That's not how you should be voting. That's not the purpose of a poll. But I want you to tell me, like, if you were an AP voter and you were charged on Sunday night to make a decision as to who the number one team in the country is, what would you do with the conundrum that Wilner is wrestling with, Georgia or Oregon? What would you, and this isn't to say that you should, you know, rank the teams based on who you think would win a head-to-head game, but the guidelines that the AP voters are given, I have them in front of me. There are four things. You're supposed to base your vote on performance. You're supposed to avoid regional bias. You are supposed to pay attention to head-to-head results. You're not supposed to be a homer. You are not supposed to hesitate to make significant changes in your ballot. You can jump a team over another team. And there is the criteria for voting. And if you're an Oregon fan, by the way, how much does this really matter? Like, you know, if you're unanimous one or you're number one, I don't know if that matters. But it matters to some people. Wilner's getting, some Duck fans coming after him. Some Duck fans are coming after me saying, pass this message to Wilner. He's a bum. Has he lost his mind? And I did ask him, have you lost your mind? I would put Oregon number one. But I sort of respect that he's got his own criteria and he sees the world a little differently. And that's what makes a poll a poll. 503-417-7575. Tell me what you do with your vote. How would you vote? How would you determine who the number one or number two or number three teams are going to be? Frankly, let's extend this to the Heisman vote because it's not all that different. The Heisman vote, though, instead of having 61 voters, has more than 900. And the Heisman vote, I think, is largely skewed by the shoulder programming at ESPN and Fox that sort of dictates that these are the Heisman hopefuls. These are the people who should be on the ballots. And I hate when I hear that because I don't want any of that noise in my head. I want to be able to evaluate the Heisman candidates on my own, but you can't help but hear about Travis Hunter and Ashton Jeanty and Dylan Gabriel and whoever's playing quarterback at Georgia or Alabama in a given year, Ohio State. And those are the candidates that we are told by the shoulder programming and the partners of those conferences. Those are the candidates who matter. Why? Why do they do that? Well, they do that in part because they're promoting their games. They're promoting their product. Hey, check out Heisman hopeful Travis Hunter. He'll be playing on Fox this weekend. Hey, Boise State's Ashton Jeanty, a Heisman favorite, will be out. Like, we're told that over and over before it is even true. The Heisman finalists are not determined until that Monday after the conference championship games at the end of the season. So But we're told all season long who should be on the ballots. And I fall prey to it just like a lot of the other voters. Further, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is going to come out here on election night, on a Tuesday night here in early November. And the selection committee is going to tell us who the top 25 teams are in the country. And the selection committee is going to rank them. We're going to get a peek at those early rankings that the committee has come up with. I can't help but think that the selection committee is impacted by the AP top 25 ballot. I don't think it will mirror that ballot, but I think, how can they not be? They see it on a weekly basis. They're told this team's number one, this team's number two, this team's number five, this team's number seven. Oh, this team has wins over seven ranked opponents in the top 25. This team hasn't played a team that's in the top 25. Like, we get all that data and all that feedback constantly thrown at us. So how does it not matter as the College Football Playoff Committee goes to sit down and make that first ranking? And how much does that first ranking impact what happens in subsequent weeks and how we value the wins that take place between, you know, about week 10 and the end of the season? I want your thoughts on all of this. Voting, polling, the AP poll, the College Football Playoff ranking, the Heisman. I can tell you that you know, I get lobbied by fan bases. You should vote for the Army quarterback. You should vote for the Boise State running back. You should vote for the Oregon quarterback. I get lobbied on social media. I also know, as a Baseball Writers Association voter for the Hall of Fame, that some of the players who are on the ballot will reach out and say, hey, I'd like to come on your radio show. And I'm like, oh, you're trying to get my vote. So I think in the end, like, Gary Sheffield coming on this show, cool, but it didn't change how I voted for Gary Sheffield when it came to the Baseball Writers Association. But I can guarantee you, some publicist for Gary Sheffield was like, who out there has a radio show and has a vote in the Baseball Writers Association Hall of Fame vote? Let's see if we can get some airtime with somebody who's actually going to be casting a vote. Like, it's just amazing to me the amount of pandering that goes on and how it all sort of layers into what we see on a college football Saturday. I want you to tell me what you would do with a vote and what you make of the fact that we do see these entities looking over at each other while they're determining who matters and what games matter in college football. 503-417-7575. We got a lot to talk about this week. We're going to have big guests all week long. I'm headed to Ann Arbor for Oregon, Michigan. Not Michigan with Jim Harbaugh, but it's still Michigan. It'll be, I think, Oregon's most difficult road test of the season. Is that saying a lot? That Oregon played at Purdue, played at UCLA, played at Oregon State. We haven't seen the Ducks play anybody yet. This is at least somebody who was a somebody. Roy is in Portland. Roy, welcome to the conversation.
Hey, how you doing, John?
I'm all right.
This is the problem that I have. First of all, let's talk about Oregon.
Yeah.
And as I'm going through their schedule, this team against Michigan is not the same Michigan. But my goodness, Oregon has, I'm not trying to hate on y'all, but I'm saying the same thing about the University of Texas. You have played no one. The whole season, you played six games in the state of Oregon. You played one game at Oregon State, five home games. Then you played a lousy USC team, a UCLA team. And then you played a 1-6 Purdue team. I mean, and now you ain't no number one in the country. Something sits wrong with me about that. I just don't like it. You have not had a road test the whole season. Meanwhile, teams like Georgia playing everybody in the top 10, and teams like Texas and Oregon and Ohio State, I'll throw them in there, and not playing anybody. So I think the whole thing comes down to these preseason rankings, too. The preseason rankings mess up everything because the first ranking should not come out to the fourth week of the season.
Agree.
Because you got these teams ranked number one, this team is number two. Based off of what? What are you basing that off of? Just because some guys get together and say, well, we think Georgia's the number one team, and we think Oregon is the number one team, and they haven't played anybody yet. So the first rankings for everything needs to come out the fourth week of the season. Oregon, I don't know if they're good. I know Ohio State is not good. That's what I do know. Ohio State is terrible. They almost lost to Nebraska. I don't know what to expect from them. I don't even think Ohio State is going to the Big Ten championship. I really don't. I think they're going to get beat by Penn State this weekend, and that's going to be the end of Ohio State. You know,
Do you think? Let me throw something at you. You're a voter, Roy. Who's number one on your ballot?
Number one on my ballot, and I know y'all going to say, number one on my ballot is Georgia, because they have played a hard schedule. You played Alabama, okay? You went to number one Texas and played on the road. You got, so far, we've had the harder schedule than Oregon. Now, if we beat Tennessee, and if we beat, who else we got coming up? I can't think of it right now. But if we beat Tennessee, Florida, we should be number one in the country. I can't
Ole
put
Miss.
Oregon.
You go to Ole Miss. You go to Ole Miss.
Yeah, Ole Miss. That's another ranked team. I can't put Oregon, and I'm not hating on Oregon. I can't put Oregon number one. I know Oregon is like Indiana to me. Who have you played? Okay, I can't look at Indiana as a top team. Okay? You have to play somebody. And there is no excuse for the Big – I think the Big Ten and the SEC took the teams that they thought was going to be the best in that conference, Oregon and Texas, and they gave them an easy schedule. Because you cannot tell me, John, USC, UCLA, Washington – have been going through the gauntlet. They have been going back and forth across the country. Oregon has not left the West Coast. They didn't leave the West Coast until Purdue. And that's not fair. All the rest of the teams in the former Pac-12, USC, Washington, and UCLA was going back and forth all over the country. Now, I know Oregon is going to Wisconsin, Oregon is going to Michigan, but that's not going to cut it, man. You can't stay on the West Coast and not play USC. How do you not play USC if you're Oregon? Every year, John, I don't care what the Big Ten got to do, Oregon got to play two teams, Washington and USC. That's a must. You cannot. How are you not playing USC? I don't get the Big Ten scheduling. I don't know what they were doing, but it's unacceptable that Oregon was on the West Coast for all of they for doggone near the whole season. They didn't leave the state of Oregon. They played six games in the state of Oregon. They played one lousy Purdue team. Now they're number one in the country. That's unacceptable. I'm sorry.
Roy in Portland laying it down. He's a Georgia fan, though. But does he have truth in his logic? He's going to love John Wilner's vote because John Wilner put Georgia number one on his ballot. He put Oregon two. He put Texas three. Mark in Portland. Mark, what's on your mind?
That Roy's a joke. Ohio State's not any competition now. Now Ohio State sucks. The further this season goes, the more excuses Roy is making, okay? Oregon has beaten three top 20 teams, and they just destroyed a top 20 team 38-9. Let's talk about Georgia, who barely beat Kentucky and lost to Alabama, who's struggling to beat anybody. So Georgia does, you know, if I was to bet on the game right now, I'd probably take Georgia because the halftime of the Alabama game, they seemed to turn things around, but they started the season off like crap, John. They almost lost to Kentucky.
Yep.
Oregon has beaten three top 20 teams. Georgia's beaten two. And all this talk really is irrelevant. But to say that Oregon hasn't beaten anybody, I don't know what he's smoking. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know how irrelevant it's going to be if somebody ends up on the wrong side of the bracket or as the five seed someday because the committee looks at the AP top 25 poll and goes, well, you don't have enough wins over, you know, ranked teams. And so you're going to be the five, you're the number five conference champion. It's not going to happen to Oregon, but it's going to happen to somebody someday. And I kind of wonder about the AP poll in general. Why do we do a preseason poll? What does that mean?
Yeah, I just think right now that, you know, clearly Georgia and Oregon are the top two teams, and it really doesn't matter who you put at the top. But Georgia lost a game, John. The Ducks haven't lost yet. They're undefeated. They play. It's not their fault that Michigan's having an off year. But, I mean, come on, USC. Oregon does really well against USC, and we would have gladly played them at USC or wherever. Oregon right now looks like the best team in the Big Ten, and Georgia looks like the best team in the SEC. Can we just wait until they settle it on the field? And all this talk is just really irrelevant. I mean, to slam Oregon.
Yeah, it's probably appreciate it, Mark. It's probably in other years prior to the expanded playoff a lot more infuriating to fans like the fan base at Oregon, who are looking at years of being discounted as a Pac-12 team, years of being discounted as a team in the Pacific time zone, had some years where Oregon, if the playoff had been a 4-team or an 8-team or a 12-team playoff, would have got to settle it on the field, but didn't get to settle it on the field. This year's supposed to be different. I still think that somebody, though, is going to end up in a bad position, not getting a first-round bye, or, frankly, getting seated lower or getting knocked off the bubble when they should have been the 11 or the 12, getting knocked out because the committee goes, well, you haven't played any ranked teams. I'm still left going, it's so subjective. The preseason poll frames the early part of the season. We don't know who's good and who's not good. Look at all the Big 12 teams that were ranked so high and now have fallen out. You look at the preseason rankings with Utah being in the top and BYU being out. Now they flipped positions. You look at what people thought about Arizona State. We didn't allow these teams, and the AP polls didn't allow these teams to even say who they were before everybody judged them. They hadn't played a game. They were, you're no good. Discounting that early season win. Washington State beat Texas Tech. Everybody went, nah, Texas Tech not very good. And so Texas Tech is all right. But I'm left looking at a school like Indiana, looking at a school like Oregon, looking at Pitt undefeated still. And I'm saying, gosh, these teams do deserve the benefit of the doubt. Until somebody beats them or a couple of somebody's beat them, they're going to have to be dealt with. More of your phone calls, 503-417-7575. I'll play a little John Wilner, have him explain his AP Top 25 ballot. If you haven't heard it yet, it's pretty good radio. Let's stick around.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
John Wilner's my friend. He's a colleague. I got a lot of respect for him. Would I vote how he would necessarily vote in the AP poll? No. Does all this matter all that much? It doesn't, but it's a fascinating look, I think, inside sort of the psyche of a voter. And it gives us a glimpse at one of the inherent problems, I think, in allowing people to vote and then subsequently penalizing them if they don't see the world the same as everybody else. I think we're getting probably a glimpse at maybe a very similar dichotomy in watching political elections, right? What happens when you talk about politics or religion or, in some respects, sometimes the economy? But let's just use politics as an example because it's such a lightning rod, as Joey Bosa proved last night after Sunday Night Football, and he throws on a cap. Could hardly see what it said, but everybody knew what it said. You could see George Kittle's reaction on social media. And then, of course, there's a firestorm because people are so upset that, you know, oh, they don't see the world like I see it, or I'm offended by this because you don't see things how I see things. And I don't care which side you're on. It's kind of how both sides react. Everybody gets offended, and everybody gets offended by it. My own mother is guilty of this. She will look at something that someone said that disagrees with her, and she'll say, you know, I don't understand how they could have that viewpoint. I said to my mom, I said, Mom, they also look at you and go, I don't understand how you could have that viewpoint. And it's kind of the just human nature, and it's the way that we think about things. So I really want to caution people as not just with sports, but with anything else. I do think it's a better world and a better place if we can all kind of agree that it would be a boring world and a boring place if we all agreed on everything. There's a way to disagree that isn't offensive to, you know, other people. There's a way to distance yourself from the personal feelings that you have and say, look, this is my viewpoint. This is how I feel. This is my vote on this issue. This is my vote on college football. I mean, is it possible that the voting in the AP Top 25 poll could teach us all something about how maybe we should approach November's election? Steven, I don't know how you vote. Judah, I don't know how you vote. I'm glad you have a vote. I have a vote, too. If they align up, great. If they don't line up, that's okay, too. I know my mom and dad, when I was growing up, had a couple of presidential elections where they voted for opposite sides. And I went, how can that be? You're canceling each other out. Your vote doesn't count. And at the time, that seemed like the logical approach. But then I went, well, I get it. Like, everybody's supposed to have a vote. Everybody's supposed to have an opinion. We don't have to agree that a movie's great or not great. My 8-year-old and 10-year-old disagree on that new robot movie that's out. One of them thinks it's great. The other one was like, eh, it's okay. And, you know, it's not offensive if your tastes are different. Not everybody needs to like the same flavor of ice cream. It would be boring. But I think we can agree fundamentally that the way to disagree would be, you know, maybe it's more civil. Maybe it's just okay if we disagree on things. But it's kind of not the climate we're in. And it's partly like last night as I watched Nick Bosa do what Nick Bosa does. You know, he throws on the cap. He peers over Brock Purdy's shoulder on Sunday Night Football. You can't even read the cap. It says Make America Great Again, like after you freeze frame it. And in the end, I'm left going, well, this is going to be a lightning rod. Guess Bosa got what he wanted ultimately. But, you know, he later says, you know, it was an important time, an important thing. He wanted to make a statement. Okay, that's cool. I don't hate you for it. I also don't love you for it. And it wouldn't matter what was said on your hat, one way or the other. Who you vote for who you're going to vote for. Let other people vote for who they're going to vote for. Let's see what happens. It's kind of the spirit of democracy. Okay, we're not supposed to smother each other. We're not supposed to mute each other. And the same should go for voters in the AP Top 25 poll. Now, I'm going to play some of Wilner's comments. Before I get into it, if you want the full interview, you can go to Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. I tweeted out a link to it. It's on YouTube. But, Stephen, before I get into some of Wilner's comments about his vote, not against Oregon, but for Georgia, he's the only AP voter who thinks Georgia is the number one team. And Oregon, everybody else has Oregon. It means something to some Oregon fans to be unanimous. I bet Dan Lanning loves Wilner for voting him second. But you tell me, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think it is actually important to note that he's not voting against Oregon. He's voting for Georgia. Like, I think there's certain instances where you are voting against a team, but this isn't one of them. Like, he doesn't think Oregon's bad. It's more that I just think Georgia's better. Now, I would give my vote to Oregon. I think
I would, too.
I think for Oregon, the fact that they have the win over Ohio State, you can't say they didn't play anybody. So, like, when Roy says they don't play, well, they played Ohio State. Like, we all know Ohio State's supposed to be good. Are they as good as we thought they'd be at the start of the year? Maybe not, but that's going to be a quality win no matter what. I do think, though, if both teams played their top game, if they both played their A-plus game, Georgia's the better team. And so I don't blame Wilner if that goes into his thought of saying, well, I'm voting who I think is the best team. If I put them on the same field, I'm voting for Georgia because I think they would beat Oregon. I think that is true. But I put a little bit more of my formula on the field. What was the result of the game? Georgia has a loss. I know that they came back. They battled tough against Alabama, but they lost that game. Oregon had a tough battle against Ohio State. They ended up winning. Now, it could have been very easily. Had Will Howard slid 1 second earlier, Oregon gets a loss. But the ultimate result was a W. I don't take, you know, the close wins for Georgia against Mississippi State, who's not very good, against Kentucky, who's okay. Oregon had some tough battles against Boise State and Idaho. They're all the same. Oregon has the win over Ohio State. I think that matters. Georgia has the win over Texas. That matters. So for me, it's just that one loss. It's the one little, you know, the game of inches as football is. Georgia has a loss against Alabama. Oregon doesn't. Oregon has a very quality win against Ohio State to go against Georgia's quality win over Texas. I'd have to give it to Oregon, but I do think Georgia's the better team. If you put them on the field right now, Georgia would be favored. I would probably pick Georgia in that game. But right now, it's different. It's the rankings. It's not my power rankings. It's the actual ratings of the teams. Yeah. For that, I give it to Oregon.
Yeah, and the AP poll does, I think, affect the mindset of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. It's not supposed to, but I think it does. How can it not? You know, and my kids even know, the 8-year-old and the 10-year-old, when they tune into a football game, they always look at the number next to the team, and they look at the record of the team. It's right there in front of you with the ticker on the screen. And you know, my 10-year-old daughter will be like, oh, that's number 5. They're pretty good. Like it, and so the selection committee gets that data as well. Now, I'm just going to play a snippet of Wilner and I talking. You want the whole thing? It's on YouTube, Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. I tweeted it out. But here's Wilner sort of justifying putting Georgia number 1 in front of Oregon.
You know, I didn't know until we were just talking before we started recording. I didn't know that I was the only one voting for Georgia number 1 for starters. Boy, the poll is an interesting thing, and it's different. I think it's different than Heisman voting, probably different than your baseball Hall of Fame voting, which I would love to hear more about.
Yeah.
There's what, 61 voters. It's based on the AP figures out how many voters per state based on how many major college teams there are in that state. And I've been asked to vote in the AP poll for 20 something consecutive years, football and basketball. So they must not hate what I'm doing. And everybody's does it differently, right? Yeah, you have your own criteria. It's purposefully vague. And we can get into the guidelines, which we have. But the AP leaves it very open-ended. So there's voters who decide to base their ballot on just the number of losses, right? Everybody with 0 losses up top and then 1 and 2. There's people who vote based on margin of victory or defeat. I happen to try to heavily weigh, and I've always done it this way, heavily weigh who you play, where you play, and how you do. So strength of schedule, strength of competition matters a lot to me, probably more than other voters, which is fine. There's no right or wrong. And specifically with the case of Oregon and Georgia, Oregon has 1 fewer loss, but Georgia has played a much tougher schedule and has a much, I think their performance in the big games has been much better than Oregon. So that's, we can get into more of it, but basically it's who Georgia's played, where they've played them, and how they've done. It's nothing.
There he is. All right. So he's going into who they've played, where they played, how they've done. And I can't quibble with it. And here's the thing. Is it what I would do? No. Is it necessarily a vote against Oregon? I guess you could view it that way. And I think some Oregon fans are. You know, I have seen a few things. People are like, pass a message on to this bum. That, you know, this is how I feel. I don't know why that's so important to some people, that we all see it the same way. Oregon's number 1 in the polls. It's not, you know, it's not close. They've got all but 1 vote. And I do think it's important, like, he's not putting Oregon 18th. He's putting them 2nd. It's not dramatically different to not see those two things being the same. We go on to talk about sort of a little more of this. Here's another snippet of Wilner and I kind of speaking to it. By the way, do you understand his logic there, Stephen? Do you sort of see what he's saying there?
I do, yeah. It's how he views how, you know, the other teams that they've played. Now, I would argue that it's, you know, we always look at the poll and we see, you know,
right.
we get mad at what the poll results are. Now, Wilner's saying, well, you know, the win at Kentucky isn't that bad. It's actually a good win when the win over Idaho for Oregon isn't a great win. Like, it's just, I feel like you're being very nitpicky there. But like, you know, like you said, it's good to have disagreements. And I think, I don't think Wilner's wrong for thinking Georgia's number 1. I just don't think they're number 1. So like, it's just, I don't know. It's just tough. Like you're putting in your own bias already to who they played, no matter what it is. There's no definitive way to find out how good any team is.
I ask Wilner, the poll comes out. He sees all but 1 vote going to Oregon. What crosses his mind? Because I think there would be a human nature there, a temptation there to be like, what am I not seeing? Why don't I see it the same way that everybody else sees it? I know as a Heisman voter, I've been in that position where I've looked over and I've said, gosh, everybody's voting for Jaden Daniels at LSU. I get it. He's in the SEC. But Michael Penix is having the better year. Like, doesn't anybody else see that? Now, I'm not the only one, but I'm watching the vast majority of people give their number one vote to Jaden Daniels. I've got Daniels second. It's not like I'm dramatically different. But guess who's mad at me? LSU fans. They're pissed. Here's Wilner on the thought process after he sort of sees that he's the only one voting for Georgia. And so you don't know, like, when you see everybody else has voted Oregon, you're the only one that's on the other side.
Yeah.
Do you, for a moment, go, what am I not seeing that everyone else is seeing? Or do you just say, that's why it's a poll?
No, I don't do what is everybody else seeing. First, so I submit my ballot. The ballots are due. It's either 7 or 8 a.m. on Sunday morning Pacific time. You got to go on the AP website, and they've got this whole platform. You fill out your ballot. I always do mine before I go to bed Saturday night. So I'm usually doing it 1 or 2 in the morning, early Sunday. And I submit it, and then I wake up, and I don't look to see what the AP ballot is. I didn't know.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, I found out days later that I was one of only two who were voting Georgia number one. I see where the teams are ranked when I'm researching other articles, but I don't actually look at the poll itself. So I don't know who's where. I don't know how many people are voting for who. And this is not the first time that I have been an outlier vote, either for a team on top or otherwise. But the AP doesn't want groupthink. And that's the one thing I would impress. And you should get into this yourself.
Yeah, I mentioned groupthink earlier in the show, in the opening segment. It's dangerous. It essentially is the idea that, you want everyone to be cohesive and share a viewpoint. And so, you're having a cocktail party with eight people there, and you start to pressure the people in the room who have dissenting opinions to kind of join your viewpoint and not think critically for themselves. And suddenly, you get everybody in alignment. We've all been in those situations, and it rears its head at family gatherings on the holidays, where we say things like, don't talk about religion, don't talk about politics, partly because it gets combative. But if you're in a car and Stephen and I are making a 2-hour drive to somewhere in Southern Oregon, and we're going to be on the I-5 together, and there's two other people in the car who think Dylan Gabriel's the Heisman Trophy winner, and Stephen thinks Dylan Gabriel should be the Heisman Trophy winner, and I say, gosh, on my ballot, I have Ashton Jeanty of Boise State number one. Gabriel's on my ballot, but I've got him third. Suddenly that drive takes on a different kind of approach. And if we arrive at our destination and I have changed my viewpoint, that's not good. I think a poll is a poll and a vote is a vote for a reason. And I think we serve as a check and a balance for each other. And I think we have to critically think for ourselves. And sometimes you're not going to agree with me, and sometimes we are going to agree, and that's okay. But I want people to think for themselves. I don't want us all to sort of just go, hey, we need to get along. We need to agree on things. Let's all see things the same way. So it's an interesting peek into the mind of a voter. Wilner went into all the guidelines, and we talked about the Heisman vote. We talked about the AP Top 25 vote. We talked about the baseball writers vote. I just got some information on the next Hall of Fame vote from the Baseball Writers Association, and I'm sitting here deeply conflicted over, Major League Baseball to Portland, if it happens, of course I want a Hall of Fame vote, but if it never is going to happen, do I want to be voting in the Hall of Fame? I have questions about all of these things, and I think it's an interesting conversation to have, and it's a good rainy day conversation as well. Our big splash is coming up. Leave it here.
To the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
49ers got back on their feet, I guess, Sunday night against the Cowboys. I don't know, Steven. It's about the closest thing I can be to a fan when I'm watching the Niners, because I can sort of experience the agony of victory in watching a game like that on Sunday night.
Well, it kind of goes with what we were talking about with the polls. Like, did the Niners win or did the Cowboys lose? Like, are we going to give the 49ers really credit for that win? Cowboys were pretty bad at that one.
The Niners looked like they were back for about 12 minutes. And then at the end of the game, I saw some of the same things that have plagued them throughout this season. I think the stat that came up during the broadcast was they had lost two 10-point leads in the fourth quarter. And I think there were only two others in the entire league that had happened. Two other teams that had had an issue like that. So they almost blew a third. So they had a nice defensive stand, I guess, at the end of the game. Otherwise, it was going to be really dicey. I got a question for you. We're talking about polls. We're talking about rankings. All this other stuff. I went into this a little bit today in my writing at johnconzano.com as I talked about the postseason hopes for Washington State. Somebody asked me, will the Alamo Bowl look at Washington State? And for people who don't know, the original Pac-12, the legacy Pac-12, you know who I'm talking about, the 12 teams, their bowl affiliations this college football season and next don't change. So Stanford and Cal, for example, Washington, Arizona State, others, if they get bowl eligible, the Pac-12's bowl affiliations apply to them. So they can qualify to go to an Alamo Bowl or a Holiday Bowl or a Vegas Bowl. Now, the Pac-12 still has six affiliations with bowls. The prevailing thought is that Oregon is going to make the playoff. So Oregon would not be eligible to go to a Pac-12 bowl. They'll go to the playoff instead. But the Alamo Bowl, Holiday Bowl, Vegas Bowl, Sun Bowl, LA Bowl, and Independence Bowl are the six bowl games for the Pac-12 in order. That's the draft order. So the Alamo Bowl gets the top draft of all the teams that don't go to the playoff. Now, the rules, and I asked the Pac-12 today for the rules. The rules dictate that the bowls can draft teams that are within one loss of each other. So if Washington State is 11-1 and they don't make the playoff as an at-large team, only an 11-1 or a 10-2 team could slip in front of them to go to the Alamo Bowl. So Washington State fan says, how likely is it that Washington State goes to the Alamo Bowl? Well, you tell me Washington State's record, and then I'll tell you how likely it is. Because if Washington State's 11-1, the only team that can slip in front of Washington State and go to the Alamo Bowl would be Colorado if Colorado's 10-2 and doesn't make the playoff. And at that point, a 10-2 Colorado could be drafted by the Alamo Bowl, but a 9-3 Colorado not eligible to be drafted by the Alamo Bowl unless they cut a side deal. And those side deals do happen. But so I think it's likely that if Washington State goes 11-1, that they would end up in the Alamo Bowl, and Colorado will either end up in the Holiday Bowl or Las Vegas Bowl, depending on how many games they win. And by the way, can we just give a nod to Colorado coming up with a nice win in a physical game against, you know, an opponent in Cincinnati that had shown me something a week earlier? You know, problem with Colorado is I'm running into is they don't have quality wins. Like, who has Colorado played and who has Colorado beaten and who is left on Colorado's schedule is not a big conversation. So I almost feel like Colorado's in a really tough position as it pertains to the college football playoff and an at-large berth. And they're in a tough position as it pertains to respect, because even though they're winning games, they're beating Central Florida, they're beating Cincinnati, they're not getting great opportunities to play the top teams in college football and prove that, you know. So I almost think that Colorado is better positioned to kind of go for a Heisman Trophy than anything else. And after Saturday's win, the latest win, you got Coach Prime who's coming out and saying, well, why isn't Shador getting more talk for the Heisman? And to that I would say, shh, keep that down. You don't need two candidates to cannibalize each other's votes in the Heisman process. Although you've had some recent examples at Ohio State and Alabama where that happens, it generally only happens with teams that go undefeated, play for the national championship. You get a situation where you get Mac Jones and his wide receiver both in the room as a finalist. You don't often see it with teams that are like 9-3 or 8-4, but Colorado's got a chance here to win 10 games, Stephen. How big a story is that in college football?
Huge. And the interesting part to me, John, is the TV ratings are down for Colorado. Like, they've never been lower, and now they're actually starting to win. It's not, and Deion.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. Because it's not a circus, I guess. And like, Deion's not out there, you know, causing problems. Like, Deion's always out there and he's going to be saying things, but now they're actually like a coherent football team and they're actually good. Like, I'm starting to take them seriously. I thought they were going to lose the last couple of games, but they look good. Offensive line, defensive line is solid. And Shador and Travis Hunter are two of the best players in the nation. Like, this team is for real and their schedule isn't that tough. Like, they could be getting 10 wins this year.
Yeah, I think they're in a weird position because I look at the rest of their schedule and I don't think they're going to have a great opportunity aside from maybe a Big 12 championship game if they can get there to prove that, you know, they are capable of being a playoff team. I expect that they're going to be somewhere below 18 or 20 in the first set of rankings, but they got a game at Texas Tech coming up that's a big one for them.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Coming up later this hour, we're going to visit with Sammy Sullivan. You remember Samantha Sullivan? Rugby player, played on the Sevens in the Summer Olympics just this last summer. Won a bronze medal. Really good story. And what's she doing in Portland? She's into Legos. I know that. Found that out from our crack research team. But she also went to West Point. Dad was a colonel in the Army, grew up in Tacoma. Mom was a math teacher. We do a lot of research here on this show. But Samantha Sullivan will be joining us to talk about why she's in Portland and rugby in Portland. It's an all-star tournament event coming to Providence Park here in a couple weeks. If you are a rugby enthusiast or a fan of the Olympics, Sammy Sullivan will be joining us. I told Steven during the commercial break, I was like, you know, Sammy Sullivan has a bronze medal from the Olympics. She was she went to West Point, United States Military Academy. Her dad was a colonel in the Army, as I mentioned. She's into Legos. And Steven, what was your reaction to all of that?
I said it's amazing how some people are just so much better than, like, me. You know, she's out here going to West Point, Olympian rugby player, and I'm over here just trying not to mess up while I push buttons, which doesn't always happen. I always press the wrong buttons. So, you know, it's just I love hearing from people that are just so brilliant at life and act like it's not even a big deal. It's just amazing.
Is it brilliance, though? But, like, let's not downplay the fact that, like, you know, if she tries to come on this show, it doesn't happen without you.
Well,
you know, don't lose that point.
I like to degrade myself a little bit, but no, I mean, it's just, I love to hear, because there's so many talented people in the world. Like, the fact that she's an Olympian rugby player is just amazing to me. Like, that's just crazy. And then the fact, she goes to West Point. So she's actually, like, a good person and, like, loves America and, you know, defends people. It's just, I don't know, makes me feel, insignificant sometimes.
I hear she's into true crime podcasts as well. That's her guilty pleasure. And Legos. So we shall see. But she's coming to Portland in part because I'm just going to plug this and then we'll move on to Punch It Audio. But she's coming to part, like, they just announced Providence Park had a news conference about an hour and a half ago where the Rugby Sevens, the Premier Rugby Sevens All-Star Tournament is going to be taking place at Providence Park November 17th. So the Timbers and some rugby people got together and they held a news conference today. And of course we're going on air, so I wasn't there, but I said, they reached out to me and they said, hey, can she come on the show? And I was like, I remember Sammy Sullivan from the Olympics. She was running around with that rugby ball tucked underneath her arm, running around diving over the end zone or whatever they call that line. You know, did you watch the Olympics? Probably making a fool of myself right now, but you know, she was running around breaking a sweat playing rugby during the Olympics while we were watching.
Yeah, and that's the thing is we always talk about like, oh, what are the sports that we really find ourselves into? For me, it was handball and rugby. Like, I'd never really watched rugby before, but the Olympic rugby was so fascinating. We talked about it on the air like numerous times. And so, yeah, I remember her as well.
I thought the women's rugby was better than the men's rugby.
I agree.
It was jarring, and I liked it. All right, we'll interview Sammy Sullivan coming up in about 20 minutes. In the meantime, we're going to take you around the world of sports.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio,
presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with Josh Pate, who has some concerns about the Ohio State. The Buckeyes, some of the shine off. Here's Pate.
Because Ohio State won a conference game yesterday, and I am pretty terrified right now. Because this is my national championship pick. I don't feel good. I don't feel good. I feel less good after I watched them win a game yesterday. Sure, in the conference standings, there is another W. And I don't want to make light of that. There's value in winning games. Of course there is. What I am saying is, when you say a win is a win, it's insinuating that it doesn't matter if it's 49-17 or 21-17. It's just a win. No, it's not. This is not professional football. You got a different caliber athlete. You got a much bigger payroll. You got a higher paid staff. You've got all the resource advantage in the world over Nebraska. And so when you have to creep by them out of your bye week at home after they got splattered the week before by Indiana, yeah, I'm concerned, and I'm going to say there's not as much value in winning that way as it relates to the future.
Now, yes and no, because the college football playoff, when it was a four-team playoff, the thinking that the committee does might be a little different as it pertains to a 12-team playoff. The criteria when we had four teams, and Dave Bartu, the College Football Matrix, who's been on the show numerous times, will tell you this. There's seven data points that mattered. It was, did you win your championship game? It was, did you have quality wins? That means wins over teams that had a 500 or better record. Did you have top 25 wins? What was your margin of victory? What was your margin of loss? Did you have a bad loss? And what was your strength of schedule? This eyeball test that everybody's talking about, I don't think it's going to be part of what the committee considers. I think they're still going to look at, did you play in your championship game? Did you beat teams that had a record of 500 or better? Did you beat teams in the top 25? How much did you win by? Now that comes into play with a win like this. How much did you lose by? Did you have a bad loss against a sub 500 team? And what was your strength of schedule like? So, yes and no. I think it's a marker for Ohio State that's a little troubling when you beat, you know, a Nebraska team that has struggled by a 21-17 score. But I don't think it is any worse than Georgia playing Kentucky close, or Oregon struggling to beat Boise State, struggling to beat Idaho even. I think in the course of a season, you're going to see teams that have a off day. The question for Ohio State is, can they win on Saturday at Penn State? Big question for them. And then, if they do win there, Indiana at home on November 23rd. Those are two big games. If you lose those two games, you are out. You're not going to have an Ohio State team with three losses as a shoe-in in the postseason. You're probably not making the tournament. So keep an eye on that. As a marker, yeah, problematic, but much in the same way that the top 25 looked at Boise State's victory over UNLV that wasn't dominant. They covered the spread, but it wasn't dominant. Much in the same way, I think the selection committee is going to see beating Nebraska as the same as beating Michigan State or beating Marshall. Deion Sanders says Shedeur Sanders is not mentioned for the Heisman. He gives a reason why, says it doesn't matter. But why is he bringing it up if it doesn't matter?
Tonight was one of those nights. And, I mean, shoot, that's what we expect. He's so darn good that we don't give him the credit that he deserves for some of the things that he does.
Coach, he started 15-15 school record.
Wow. See, you don't even know that stuff because you're into the game and you're coaching. You don't even think about that kind of stuff. I remember, I think he did that one time in Jackson, that he was phenomenal like that. But wow. 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 And they don't even mention him for the Heisman? He's not even mentioned? Oh, my bad. He's my son. That's why.
That's not all of it. Part of it is Travis Hunter sucking all the oxygen out of the room on that conversation at Colorado. The other part is, you know, there have been some bad moments. Pick six, lost to Nebraska. Now it's a Nebraska team that we now look at and go, ah, they weren't that good. I think Shador is a really good player. I think he's going to be a good pro. But the Heisman Trophy, and I vote in this thing, doesn't always go to, like, merit-based best player in America, because a lot of the voters are just voting for the top players on the best teams. And let's be honest, anybody who watched Colorado play the other night, Travis Hunter comes away with two touchdown passes. He was wide open on both of those. It was blown coverage on one of them. And Shador makes the play. Hunter catches the pass. Who's the hero? I don't know. Maybe the offensive coordinator schemed it up. I don't know. But I don't think the reason that Shador's not getting consideration is Deion. I don't think it's spite for Deion. Shannon Sharp going after Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, the honeymoon's over.
Because it couldn't happen to a more smug, cavalier, condescending guy. Oh, that's even low for you. Now, who else are you going to blame it on? You running out of people to fire and demote. You fired Robert Saleh. You going to fire Oberg now, the interim coach? You've demoted Hackett. What you going to do? Demote the new offensive coordinator? Who else you going to trade for? Who else you going to bring in? Oh, we're a quarterback away. Stephen A., remember I had this conversation? I say you're under the illusion that that defense is going to be exactly what it was last year. In the history of NFL, only one team had a statistically, historically great defense, and it got better the following season. That's the 85 Bears. The 86 Bears were statistically better. Statistically, that's the greatest defense ever assembled. So you're saying this Jets team was going to be better than the 86 Bears. I didn't believe it.
I don't even know the logic. I can't follow the logic, but he got it right when he called Aaron Rodgers smug. It's interesting to kind of watch the Rodgers show. Jets now 2-6 after a 25-22 loss to the Patriots. Is he coming back from this for the Jets, or are you writing them all the way off right now, Steven?
No, you're writing them all the way off. I don't know how you can't right now. They look really bad. They lose to the Patriots on the road, 2-6. I mean, they're going to have to go 8-1 the final nine games of the season to even have a chance to make the playoffs. And with the way they've played, there's no way I can back them. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know if Rodgers is cooked, if he's all the way cooked, or if this is just a Jets problem, but I mean, it may be both. It may just be Rodgers is cooked and a Jets problem. It's hard to say.
They're so bad. And I'll let Aaron Rodgers explain it. He went to a darkness retreat, found some answers, now says he's back in the darkness.
Yeah, I've been in the darkness. You got to go in there, make peace with it. Offensively, our goal has just got to be score 30. Doesn't matter what the other two sides are doing. You know, we have trust in our defense and teams. But if we're not scoring 30, we're underachieving. This offense can do that every single week.
Yeah, I don't know.
So he's blaming the defense.
Yeah, he's not. It's always someone else's fault. But he's not giving the Jets the best Aaron Rodgers that we've ever seen, right? He's a shadow of himself. He's pointing fingers at the head coach. He's pointing fingers at the receiver. Robert Saleh wasn't the problem. Receivers who were dropping the ball may be part of the problem, but just inserting Aaron Rodgers in there is now turned into kind of this sideshow. Not great. Let's talk about John Mateer in Washington State. Cougars found themselves in a dicey game against San Diego State, down two scores in the fourth. Come back to win 29-26. Here's Mateer.
Mateer. Time to throw. He dances and tosses. Wide open caught by Hernandez. He stretches. Touchdown, Washington State. John Mateer delivers to Carlos Hernandez from 34 yards out. A quick strike touchdown for the Cougars.
big outcome for the Cougars, who are just trying to win as many games as possible, stay as relevant as possible. And in the end, you've got a win in San Diego that was a little dicey. San Diego State playing a little better football. Washington State on the road. Cal quarterback Fernando Mendoza, we haven't even talked about this, scores a touchdown here. Cal beating Oregon State 44-7 in a dismal performance by Oregon State.
Mendoza checks it down. Thomas is met immediately. Got it away. Mendoza scores. Wow.
Cal had its way. Oregon State, too beat up. Void of energy. Couldn't get the offense going. Can't run the football. Failed to run the ball. Couldn't stop the run. I tweeted out that it reminded me a little bit of the energy around the Gary Anderson era. And I don't mean that as a slap on Trent Bray. It just, the way they lost felt like that era, and it felt like the beginning of the Jonathan Smith era, where they lost by 40-plus to Cal as well during Smith's first year. Smith's first year was rough. There was a loss, a bad loss to Ohio State. There was a bad loss to Oregon. There was a bad loss to Stanford. There was a bad loss to Cal. There were numerous games where they were not competitive. So it just felt like that. And this, I don't think, is reflective of Trent Bray and his staff. I don't think Vince Lombardi could win with the team that roster that was out there on Saturday.
Well, when you got a dozen plus defensive guys and you're too deep, they're out of the game. I mean, how are you expected to win, especially a team like Oregon State? I think even a team like Oregon would struggle if they had that many players out on defense. And we're talking about Oregon State. I mean, it was a game that was set up for them to lose from the get-go. I still think that they can get to 6 wins, and if they do that, that's a win. And you look in the recruiting trail, Trent Bray's still getting recruits. There's no way you can blame Trent Bray, I think, for this type of loss, but you're right. It was an impossible situation on Saturday to go down to Cal and expect the Beavers to win that game.
I also think, look, you got to look at the bye week coming up this week is good for Oregon State for selling hope. Get healthier. It's not going to solve all your problems, but you're not going to play a game on Saturday. You got a chance to get healthier. You're going to get Jaden Robinson back at least as a defensive back and team captain here in 2 weeks. He'll be back for the San Jose State game. By the way, San Jose State looked bad against Fresno State last week. They've played well. They've played poorly. Seem to not be playing their best football right now, and that might be good for Oregon State. So you get San Jose State a week from Saturday at home. You got to win that game. Maybe you're healthier. Maybe it's playing at home, but you've got to win that game if you're Trent Bray, if you want to be bowl eligible, if that's still the goal. Then you go to Air Force on November 16th in a game that is winnable on the road. Air Force struggling. That's a one-win team. Those are your chances, because coming back home on the 23rd of November or going to Boise on the 30th of November, nah. Not with this team, not with this roster. And you're right about injuries, in particular to Oregon State. Oregon State lost so much of the transfer portal that when you have an injury, it's like having 2 or 3 people out. You just don't have any depth. They have no depth. And so when you lose a player, it's not the same as an Oregon or a Washington or even Washington's probably a bad example because they lost so much in the portal themselves. But it's not the same as Cal losing a player. You're now not going to just a second string player. You're going to a player who probably shouldn't be on the field for 2 years. And so the drop off is so steep that depth is amplified. The lack of depth is amplified. Cowboys defensive back Trayvon Diggs got into it with a reporter. Well, I'll let it speak for itself.
From that, that whole play that you took from that, you don't know football. You can't do nothing that I do. You can't go out there and do nothing. Stay in your lane, buddy. Stop playing me, bro.
Just asking a question, Trayvon. I mean, I'm happy to have you answer the question.
Out of that whole play, that's what you took for that? That's what you got from that? That whole play, that's what you got from that?
I'm asking.
We can talk about it more. What were you doing then?
No. Trayvon Diggs, not happy, frustrated. Meanwhile, in the Bears game, Tyreek Stevenson talking to the crowd and cheering. And you saw what happened at the end of the Bears-Commanders game. I'll let the clip speak first.
Four of them at the goal line. They bring three. Daniels backing up. He's just going to have to let one fly. Goes to the right side. Steps away from the defenders. Gives himself some time. Now steps up, fires, heads towards the end zone. It is
Hail Mary! Bears defensive back Tyreek Stevenson, who had his back turned to the play when the play started because he was trying to get the crowd fired up right before the Hail Mary.
The play was, I posted box out 85. Had to be the play was, cheering with some Bears fans. Wasn't taunting, no fans. It was just sharing with the Bears fans, and the Washington fans reacted how they wanted to. And my job was to box out 85. And, you know, when I went up to hit the ball, it was pretty much to knock it down, you know, interceptions, and, you know, especially in a close game like that. So just tried to make a play for my team. And, you know, it either could have went, oh, Tyreek, you know, good pass, knocked down, or we're in the situation we're in right now.
Such a bad look for a player involved in a game outcome changing play.
Does it matter that he says he was cheering with fans rather than talking trash to fans?
No.
I think it sounds worse even.
Ball was snapped. Your attention needs to be on your job. You should not have the back to the quarterback. It was ridiculous. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think the Bears got what they deserved on that one. Dan Lanning in the Ducks. Justin obliterated Illinois. We've been talking a lot about the Ducks on today's show.
Yeah, just attacking the ball in the air. You know, I think their wideouts do a really good job of doing that. And we challenged our guys going into the game that, hey, we're going to get some opportunities. You got to go win when we get those opportunities. And, again, he's been really good at protecting the ball this year, so we knew they were going to be hard. But their defense has been extremely advantageous into this point as far as creating takeaways. So we felt like it was kind of our defense versus their defense when it came to creating takeaways, and we were able to do that today.
Ducks forced a couple of interceptions from Luke Altemeyer, the quarterback at Illinois. Thought Oregon's defense, 6 of 8 games, they've held the opposition to 14 or fewer points. I had questions about Tosh Lapoy. They are dominating teams from the defensive side of the ball. Michigan's offense, very limited, can't throw the ball, had trouble passing the ball. I am really eager to see, will Michigan get to 14 against Oregon? Will they get to 17 against Oregon? I don't know if they will. Coming up, we're going to talk some rugby with Sammy Sullivan. West Point Sammy Sullivan. Olympic medalist Sammy Sullivan. She's in Portland. Why? We'll find out.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I like to say that I played a little rugby this summer. I didn't really, but when rugby was on during the Olympics and the United States women's rugby team was playing, my two youngest daughters were running around the living room like they were rugby players. They were fascinated by what was going on the TV. They'll get a chance to see it up close in a couple of weeks if they want, because there's an event going on, of course, in Portland at Providence Park, where you're going to see the United States, some rugby players that are coming here that are going to be part of, you know, an all-star event. And it is going to be the Premier Rugby Sevens All-Star Tournament. November 17th, Providence Park. It's why Sammy Sullivan, our next guest, who is a bronze medalist on the sevens in the Olympics, is joining us. Sammy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, John.
What's have you been to Portland a lot? Because I know you're in town for this thing, but you grew up in Tacoma, as I understand it, so it's not that far away.
Yeah, so my dad was in the Army as well, so I was born in Tacoma, but moved around all over. But I still have plenty of family up there in the Seattle area, and I've been out here for one or two rugby things, and of course hiked around here before. So, yeah, big fan of the Pacific Northwest and big fan of Portland.
All right, we're going to get into a variety of subjects here because our researchers have been working all day trying to figure out like how in 10 or 12 minutes we can make the best value of this interview. But let's start with Dad. You mentioned Dad in the armed forces. You go to West Point, United States Military Academy in West Point. What's it like growing up with a father who's a colonel in the United States Army?
Oh, it's awesome because to me, he's just Dad. So I never really thought much of his rank, but yeah, he was a special forces officer. And growing up in that environment, it's such a team-oriented environment, and I've always loved team sports. So that's what definitely caught my eye about joining the military and, yeah, ultimately going to West Point and finding rugby there.
Okay, so you say you found rugby there. Were you not playing before West Point, or had you seen much of it?
No, I'd seen none of it. I played soccer my whole life growing up and wanted to play on the West Point team, but I got cut from walking on and ultimately knew team sport environment was the best for me, so gave rugby a try in college and fell in love with it instantly.
All right, and so you end up in the Olympics, but let's go back to that, you know, that indoctrination to rugby you're getting at West Point. What did you know about the sport? Did you know the rules? Did you sort of, it was the first time you touched the ball, was that the first time you'd seen it? Like, give us an idea of how what your learning curve was like.
My dad had played rugby in college and a little bit in the service. There's some teams across America at Army bases. But for the most part, the only thing I knew about rugby is you had to pass backwards and there's no pads and you tackle. So that's pretty much all I knew going into rugby. So everything else I learned at college. But it seems complicated watching it sometimes, but it's a very intuitive game once you get down to it. So yeah, very fun.
You guys look like you were having fun in the Summer Olympics. I know you end up with a bronze medal, but it was a lot of emotion. It was a lot of passion. It got some airtime. I'm sure your phone rang, you know, from people you probably hadn't heard from in a while who said, "Oh my gosh, I saw you in the Olympics." Like, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it was cool to get to hear from some, especially Army folks. A lot of my, I was a platoon leader in Colorado before joining the U.S. team. So getting to hear from some of my old soldiers was probably the coolest part. But for the most part, it was such a broadcasted moment, but it felt like such an intimate moment with me and my teammates and our coaching staff. So for me, it just was the ultimate bonding experience, I guess I'd say, with my team. And yeah, the public response was next level. It was amazing.
We're talking to Sammy Sullivan, part of the United States Olympic rugby team, the Sevens. Sammy, you graduate high school in North Carolina, you go to West Point, you find rugby, you end up on the Olympic team. Like, does that, any of that, like, when you think about that story, it's incredible.
Yeah, I think my twin brother said this to me recently, that when we were 8 years old, and granted, I was playing soccer at the time, but when we were 8 years old, I told him I was going to be an Olympian and go to the Olympics. And he obviously laughed at me because they're, you know, some small town kid from Fayetteville, North Carolina, is probably not going to the Olympics, but here we are. And I think, you know, very full circle moment to have him and my family in the stands in Paris to get to watch me. So it all just kind of feels surreal still.
That moment where you make the team, all right, the selection process, and you make the Olympic team, because you're talking about that dream that you talked about your twin brother with. What do you remember where you were when you found out you were on the team, or how you felt in the moments as you're learning?
Yeah, so we find out every team we make, whether it's regular season, World 7 Series, or the Olympics, via an email. And I usually have a tradition that I walk my dog around the time the email goes out, so I'm not just sitting by my phone, you know, pulling my hair out. So I was on a walk with my dog, and it was just, I don't know, it was just instant, like, everything I've gone through is worth it. All the blood, sweat, and tears I've put into this sport has been worth it to get to go and fulfill my ultimate dream. So it was, yeah, an electric moment.
First phone call or text after you find out you made the team?
Oh, my mom and dad, for sure.
They had to be so proud.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, and I think they were extra excited to go to the Olympics. So, yeah, they were very excited.
Now, help me understand your association with Legos, because you build Lego sets. Like a lot of kids, you grow up with Lego. What does Lego do for you?
Yeah, so I of course built Lego sets as a kid, but joining the U.S. rugby team, it's a very mental game, professional sports. And a lot of the time, your whole life and personality can get wrapped up into it. And going into my second season with the team, being the Olympic season, I was really struggling with just getting too wrapped up in performance and how I was doing at practice. So, yeah, one day I was at Barnes & Noble and saw the adult Lego sets and picked one up, and just instantly, like, mental health release for me. And I've just fallen in love with the hobby, and my whole house is riddled with Lego sets, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
I love that. We're talking to Sammy Sullivan, United States Olympic team rugby. She's with the Sevens. Again, as I mentioned at the beginning, the Sevens are coming to Portland. Interesting Premier Rugby Sevens All-Star Tournament, November 17th, Providence Park. What's that going to be like, Sammy? Help sell that event to people who want to come out and see some Olympians play.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an awesome event. It'll be the first time sort of most of the Olympians will be playing again competitively together in the lead up to our World 7 Series and our first tournament in Dubai. So, yeah, we're coming to Portland November 17th with the Premier Rugby Sevens. You'll get to see the Olympic medalists play in real life. You're going to get to see all of the amazing up-and-coming talent and established pros and legends from USA Rugby and the international series alike. So it's going to be an awesome tournament. I won't get to play in it, unfortunately, because I'm recovering from shoulder surgery, but I'll definitely be there cheering in the stands, meeting people. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
The sport itself, you know, I obviously you mentioned Dubai. You know, you've been around the globe playing rugby. There are probably some other countries that embrace it in a way that maybe United States hasn't yet mainstream. But give me an idea of where you think rugby will be in the United States, maybe in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, I think in 5 or 10 years, I like to say this Olympics was like our 1999 Women's World Cup moment. Like, the turning point for women's soccer was kind of that infamous World Cup win. And I think in 5 to 10 years, we're already starting to see the impact of grassroots rugby sort of exploding all over America. We have kids as young as 8 years old getting into the sport, high school teams sprouting all over the country. So I think, you know, by LA 2028, we're going to have a huge following and hopefully a lot of people attending in person there. And then, you know, 2032 World Cup time, I think, yeah, it's going to be huge, especially rugby sevens is such a palatable game, electric game, exciting game to watch. So, yeah, I think more people are going to start to appreciate how awesome rugby is.
Now, the Army football team is having a great college football season. You're probably tuned into that. The Black Knights will play Notre Dame in several weeks, and I think a lot of people are interested in how that game comes out. What was it like to be a student and an athlete at Army?
Yeah, oh yeah, and big shout out to the Army football team for having such a great season this season, and hopefully I'll get to go to the Army Navy game this year. But it's pretty tough actually to be a student athlete at West Point, because you fulfill all of your military and academic obligations. You don't get any special passes for being an athlete a lot of the time. So it's a very rigorous schedule, but definitely a schedule that shaped me to have the work ethic I do today and be the workhorse I am for the USA rugby team. So yeah, huge, had a huge impact on my life.
All right. And all right. Guilty pleasure. I'm told true crime podcasts and shows and stuff like that, that you watch that stuff. Is that true? What do you get out of true crime?
Yes. Huge true crime fan. Every podcast I can, I'll listen to. All of the documentaries that come up on Netflix, I'm like instant watch. It's just really interesting to me to kind of get into the mind of how those things develop and, how detectives pick out certain things and are able to piece together stories. So it also makes me 10 times more aware of what's going on around my surroundings, and also
right.
like, maybe slightly scared sometimes
right.
in certain situations, but hey, if I'm protecting myself, then that's better than being oblivious, I guess.
Yeah, I always tell my daughters, I said, head on a swivel, right? Like, you gotta get your eyes up and be looking around figuratively and literally. All right, Sammy Sullivan, United States Olympian, bronze medalist. By the way, where do you keep the medal?
Oh, most of the time it's traveling with me to all my different events, because I love just sharing it with people, letting people hold it and stuff. But when it's at home, it's around my Lego Eiffel Tower set, sitting in the corner of my living room in full display.
Love that. Sammy Sullivan, good luck to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, there she goes. United States Olympic rugby team, the Sevens. We'll be playing at Providence Park coming up November 17th, All-Star Tournament. Leave it here.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Monday Night Football coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll be here through the 5 at 5, about 5:15. You'll get football right here on 750 The Game or whatever affiliate you're listening to. Let's take some phone calls. James is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. James, what's up, man?
Hey, John, what's going on, man?
How are you?
I'm good, man. I've been on hold for a while. I'm in my attic now currently.
What are you doing in there?
I'm sure... I'm getting Halloween boxes out and putting fans away and getting out heaters.
Yeah.
Of that nature, I'm sure
it's that time of year.
Hey, so one thing I wanted to say, we were talking about the Ducks, right?
Yeah.
Earlier. Okay, so the whole thing, like them not being ranked number one, I don't actually care if it's consensus or not. It doesn't matter to me because you get in the playoff or in the playoffs, so I don't care if they're
right.
ranked by Wilner second and everyone else is first. It doesn't matter. The only thing it actually tells me is that the Ducks left the Pac-12 for more notoriety, but they went into the Big Ten and they're the big fish, but they're still treated like the small fish.
Yes.
'Cause you better believe that if Ohio State would have won that game and they were undefeated currently right now, that Wilner probably would have voted Ohio State number one as undefeated, where Oregon is not, because they are still viewed basically as a Pac-12 team. And the
yes.
same thing with them having two Friday night games this year.
Yep.
Like, that happened here and there, but the Big Ten was like, oh, yeah, yeah, come to the Big Ten. We'll get you – the Pac-12 network sucks, and we'll get you better games and, you know, more, like, whatever. But okay, it didn't really happen that way, because a team that's ranked that high, not saying that you deserve anything, but you normally aren't playing two Friday night games. And especially – you play Friday night against Purdue, and then you turn around and have to go play against Illinois or whatever. So the scheduling for coming to the Big Ten and, hey, we'll get you way better, not so much. And also, if they were an actual Big Ten team like Michigan or Ohio State with the same record, same schedule, same everything, undefeated, no one would be talking about them not being ranked number one. They would be consensus number one. So,
I think it extends beyond Oregon, though, too. I think, you know, you look at the teams that are getting two Friday night games. It's Washington gets two, Oregon gets two, UCLA gets two. You know, the Michigan and Ohio State don't play any. You're right about that. Before I let you out of the attic, how long have you been in the attic? Like, are you up there a while, or you just popped
in? I've been in the attic for maybe about 10 minutes.
Okay.
It's not great up here. You know, you come up here like once every season.
Yeah,
and there's more cobwebs and spiders and things that were
get out of there.
My house you is gotta, in like the 1930s, and it's not great when you go up into the attic or crawl.
Yeah. All right, you need to get out of there. All right, get yourself out of there.
Get, I gotta get off the phone to get out of here. So right. I'll let you go.
Okay, all right, man. There's James and Eugene. He's in the attic. Oregon's in the Big Ten, but is Oregon in the Big Ten? That becomes the question. I think the perception of Oregon is going to change in the next 5 or 6 years, but I think it's going to take some time. Oregon has an NIL collective with super deep pockets. It's going to be sniffing around the top 10 of the rankings and in the top 10 of the rankings for the foreseeable future. I think Oregon's there to stay as a brand, but I think the caller's right in that there's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period where people still view Oregon as that team in the Pacific time zone in the Pacific Northwest. Think about the subset within the subset. There's inferiority being in the Pac-12, inferiority being in the West Coast, inferiority being in the Pacific Northwest on the West Coast. Washington and UCLA and USC have a whole different set of problems because I don't think they're going to have as easy a time. Obviously, they're not this season. And I don't think USC is going to have an easier time of getting itself to the top of the Big Ten. And I think in the end, I will not be surprised if the narrative at USC is you blew up the Pac-12 for this, because they were a top two or three team in the Pac-12. They're not in the Big Ten. And it's a small sample size, but don't like kind of the trend of what I see for USC. UCLA's worse. I don't think they can ever matter as a football school in the Big Ten. They can be a basketball school, but not a football school. And then Washington's got in this weird position where I think Washington, if it does everything right, can be a team maybe 1 or 2 years in a decade that can rise up and be a problem and make the playoff in the Big Ten. I think in the Pac-12, they could have been that team maybe 3 or 4 times in a decade. I think they're going to have a lot more difficult time of it in the Big Ten. And I think that's the reality for Washington. Let's go to Eric, who's in Vancouver. Eric, what's up, man?
Hey, a quick question on behalf of my wife, who's a big Coug fan. Okay. If Wazoo wins out and Boise State slips up, and Wazoo gets the Group of Five playoff invite, could you see a situation where the Big 12 invites them to join then, and would Wazoo accept if they even did and ditch the new look Pac-12?
Okay. A few things to unpack there. Number one, Washington State and Oregon State are not eligible to get the Group of Five berth to this year's playoff. Because their conference only has two members, it doesn't qualify. So Washington State's only way to get into the playoff would be to go 11-1 and get an at-large berth. So in that scenario, what Washington State would want is for Boise State to continue to win and win and win. And in fact, Boise State at the end of the year, if it looks up and it says, gosh, we only have one loss and our only loss is to Oregon on the road by a field goal at the end of the game, that would be good for Washington State by extension, because it makes the loss to Boise State not look as bad. But the problem Washington State has is twofold. Washington State, number one, doesn't have a great strength of schedule. It doesn't have any wins right now over teams in the top 25. It also doesn't have a lot of wins over teams that have great records. So if you're Washington State, you want to root for Washington, Texas Tech, Fresno State, San Jose State. You want those teams to all have better than 500 records. So you want to continue to root for the teams that you have defeated so that you get what they call quality wins. You also want to hope that a couple of those teams can slip into the top 25, because at the end of the season, not now, not when you played them, that's when you look at the top 25 wins and you say, all right, how many wins over top 25 teams do we have? It's in the final ranking. How many of those other ranked teams did you beat? So if you're Washington State, you want Boise State to be as high as possible. You want Washington to sneak in there. You want or Fresno State to sneak in there, or you know, you want Texas Tech ranked, you know, so there's a number of teams that if they won the rest of their games could probably show up at number 22, number 23, number 25, and you now get a quality win over a top 25 opponent. The reality for Washington State is probably that if everything goes right and they go 11-1, they're probably sitting somewhere around 14 or 15 in the final rankings and outside of the top 12, and they narrowly missed making the playoff. The only alternative to that would be if there is chaos and there's a bunch of three-loss teams and the committee just goes, hey, Washington State is at number 11 or 12. Guess what? They're the 11 seed, or they could be the 12 seed in the playoff. That's Washington's shot to get to the playoff. Now, to your wife's question about if they got a Big 12 invite, would they jump on it? I have long believed that if Oregon State or Washington State, either one got an invite to the Big 12 or somewhere else, they would fall over themselves to get in there. But right now, I'm not so sure. With the way the Pac-12 has been reconstituted, I think they're going to want to see these media rights numbers before they make any decision. And if I'm the Big 12 or the ACC, I am a little worried about, you know, what kind of value are they putting together? What are they doing with basketball? What are they doing with these other things? Because the Big 12 and the ACC are getting attacked top down from the Big 10 and the SEC. And now they're feeling a little upward pressure, I think, from the Pac-12 reconstituting itself. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But all I would tell Washington State fans is root for wins and root for the teams you beat to continue to win. That's the best case scenario for you. That's all you can control. And then maybe the downside is you go to an Alamo Bowl or a Holiday Bowl. You know, and that's not so bad given what you were facing at the beginning of the season. Leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. Here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Well, we got big guests all week long. We'll be talking about Oregon and Michigan. We'll be talking about what Oregon State needs to do to get its feet underneath it. I still think Oregon State can get bowl eligible, but the margins are so thin. And the Ducks, do they need another statement? Or is it okay just to win out? Problem the Ducks have is they will now be judged on only their mistakes. And then if they get to the Big Ten championship game, which I expect, how do they perform there? Better to have that first round bye than not. But Oregon, the knock on Oregon at the beginning of the year was what? Oh, they're not playing well. Idaho and Boise State, just wait for the Ohio State game. They beat Ohio State. Now it's, oh, Ohio State's not very good. We shall see how this ends for the Oregon Ducks. But I will be there. I'll be in Ann Arbor on Saturday, and I'll be reporting about it and have all the details for you. Steven's going to do the 5 at 5. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football. Steven, are you ready?
Let's do the thing.
Let's do it.
The 5 at 5. Number one.
Well, John, the Blazers, they got the first win over the weekend. They beat the Pelicans last night. They got their second win today. Now, not on the court as they do play the Kings, but that's not the actual win. The win comes as the team announced they are bringing back commemorative glasses with the players on them. These were made really popular in the 90s. As a 90s kid here in the area, I love those. You go to Dairy Queen, they get them out. They had all the really good players. They were really cool. They're bringing those back. The glasses will have Donovan Klingon, Scoot Henderson, and Shaedon Sharpe, three different players on them. The glasses will be available for the first 7,777 fans attending the select home games. The home games are November 13th against the Timberwolves. That will be Donovan Klingon. The Scoot Henderson will be sometime between December 10th and 17th, which will be an NBA Cup game. And then the Shaedon Sharpe glass will be on January 16th against the Clippers. So if you're a Blazer fan, or you just, you know, like some cool looking glasses that you can drink out of, be sure to get your tickets for those ones. I love it. As a 90s kid, John, those were the coolest. We had all of them. You go to Dairy Queen, it's a big deal. Then you had the glasses, you know, drink soda out of them when you're watching the games. It was a lot of fun.
Makes you feel closer to the team. You got Anfernee Simons or Shaden Sharpe right in your hand.
Yeah, well, how about that, though? They no Anfernee Simons, no Jeremy Grant. Their actual best players is all the young guys. I think that's the direction they're going.
Well, coming to a Goodwill near you.
Check your local thrift shops.
Number two.
We were talking about Colorado earlier, how they have been really good. Well, Colorado's Travis Hunter, he has became the first player ever to win the Big 12 Offensive and Defensive Player of the Week in the same season, following Colorado's win over Cincinnati 34-23. Hunter, he set single-game career highs for both pass breakups on Saturday and receiving yards. He had 4 pass breakups and 153 receiving yards, along with his 2 touchdowns against Cincinnati. He played 132 snaps in the game, all 61 on defense for the season. Hunter, 60 catches, 8 touchdowns, and 2 INTs on the season. He's incredible, but first player to ever win the Big 12 Offensive and Defensive Player of the Week in the same season.
There you go. Look, you're going to hear a lot of noise about Travis Hunter for the Heisman. I would encourage people to think like a Heisman voter while you're watching all of this. Because, in part, yes, he's doing great things. It's great to notice them. But let's not forget about other players across college football and even his teammate, as Coach Prime points out, who are doing great things. Reserve your judgment is what I'm saying for the end of the season.
Who's more important to that Colorado team, Shador or Travis Hunter?
Shador. They don't, you know, how many wins would they have without Shador? They can win without Travis Hunter. Yeah. Travis Hunter's a good player. He helps them win. Like, but how many wins do they have without Shador?
That's true.
Number three.
Well, your 49ers are 4-4 on the season. They beat the Cowboys on Sunday, and they have a bye week, but they are going to be getting some good news as Christian McCaffrey, he's been out the first 8 games of the season. He's going to remain in the Bay Area this week during the bye week, and Kyle Shanahan described it today. He did simulated practice stuff with an eye toward opening his practice window on November 4th. Shanahan said it depends on how the week goes, but he's had no setbacks. He's on track. He's going to hit it hard this week while everyone's gone, and as long as it looks good, they will hopefully get him back for practice next week. So the 49ers, they have a bye week, as they are 4-4 on the season. They haven't had Christian McCaffrey, but they're hoping to get him back for their week 10 game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the road, where both those teams are 4-4, and then they play the Seahawks the next week after that. So Christian McCaffrey could be coming back as long as he looks okay in practice and looks like he's doing some stuff on the field. He's been out all year with that with all the shin stuff and the leg stuff, and this has been really a bad season for Christian.
I'm looking at, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs from a year ago, and a little bit different story, because the Chiefs were really good in like the first 7 weeks of the season. They were 6-1 out of the gates. They really struggled week 8 through week 16. And when you look at their schedule, they lost 5 games in that 8-week stretch. They ended up with 6 losses on the season, 11-6. They back into wild card weekend, and then they go on to win the Super Bowl. 49ers approaching this a little differently. They're sitting now at 4-4 through 8 weeks. It's been a real mixed bag, and they need to be cleaner down the stretch. They cannot afford to get to 6, 7, 8 losses and jeopardize even, you know, getting to the playoffs. So, you know, this is really about getting guys back at the right time and then trying to solve some of those problems on defense. But I Sunday night I was watching it and I was like, you know, it can't all be Christian McCaffrey. That's just part of it. 49ers, you have to be better in general. They have to be better situationally. I didn't like how they were defensively late in that game, but they have enough talent, and they scare people because they have talent.
Number four.
Another 4-4 team is the Indianapolis Colts, and their quarterback, Anthony Richardson, he has struggled this season. John, he has some really bad stats. His QBR, 38.4, 27th in the league, 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. But listen to this. A 44.4% completion percentage on the season for Anthony Richardson. Now, during their loss to the Texans on Sunday, Richardson went out of the game in the third quarter just for a very little bit of time. And he was asked about after the game. I want to get your thoughts on this. This is what Anthony Richardson said after the game on why he left the Houston Texans game on Sunday.
Man, it's hard. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there, what I did. And I don't think I was going to be able to go that next play. So I just you know, this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
He said he was tired.
Took a nap.
Yeah, I mean, that's a must-lie situation, right? You can't say you're tired and you're fatigued and you need to come out of the game. Bad luck for Anthony Richardson right there. How do you feel about that? How would you feel if your leader, your team, it's like, yeah, I can't play right now. I'm tired. I need a break, and we need a backup in there.
I think that he should have just stayed in the game. If you're tired from running around out there, I don't know. Like, I've seen players who will leave the field and say, hey, I had to run to the restroom. I don't know if that would have been a better excuse for Anthony Richardson. It's just, it's such a weird thing to say. And granted, if you're not playing all that well, it becomes an even more difficult thing to hear.
Is that a thing that loses the locker room? Like, loses trust, you think, between the other players?
It just depends what the truth is. And because I kind of feel like he's either being dumb there and actually telling us the truth, or there was something else going on. You know, did he tell his coach he didn't want to go back out there? I don't know. Like, I need to know more. I need to know what actually happened.
And the thing is, they're 4-4, they're right in the middle of the playoff race. They have Joe Flacco, who's maybe the best backup quarterback in the NFL. Like, that's a tough look, man. I don't know. I think I'd lose a little confidence if you're running around out there and you're like, yeah, I'm just tired. I can't, you know, take this playoff. I don't know. I don't like that.
Number 5.
College basketball season starts next Monday, which I'm excited for. Not a lot of people are excited, but Coastal Carolina, John, they're doing something pretty cool. They announced a We Win, You Win money-back guarantee for its basketball program. So any fan who purchases a men's or women's basketball season ticket before November 3rd, they're going to receive a full refund if the teams combine to win 35 regular season games. So the men and women, you got to root hard for your teams to get your money back for the season tickets. Now, Boise State, they did kind of a thing, same thing. They did a We Win, You Win promotion for their season opener last year against UCF, where fans who purchased a special ticket would receive a complimentary ticket to the team's next game had Boise State won. Boise State did it. They lost to UCF 18-16 in that game. But Coastal Carolina, their fans, if you want to get to 35 wins, they have 57 combined games, so they're going to have to go 35-22. Last year, the men went 9-22, and the women went 12-21. So not looking up for that, but a cool little promotion, I thought, to try to intrigue some fans to buy some season tickets.
I like that. I mean, you're trying, right? You know, I think in sports, one of the great things we've seen in minor league baseball and in professional sports, of course, you know, in major league sports, is promotion night. And so this is a promotion for the season. It screams, you know, get behind the team, and if the team delivers, you win too. So you're sharing in the success of the team while also investing in the team. So I don't mind that at all. I think it's a good promotion. I was looking today at Taiwanese baseball. Somebody asked me in the mailbag, the Monday mailbag, about baseball in Taiwan. They have the Chinese Professional Baseball League. And I was looking at their promotion nights. They do some wild things for promotions that we don't do in the United States. They have a puppet night instead of bobblehead nights. They do puppets. And they also have food trucks that are all around the stadium. The tickets are only like $11 to get into a professional baseball game. And and the stadiums are just pristine clean. It's just, it's really interesting to me. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another great show.
Connect to this radio station from all across the country. Stream us anywhere, anytime. Listen to us now on the free iHeartRadio app. Your favorite radio station is just one tap away. Download the free iHeartRadio app and search for this station so you never miss a moment.